You have returned to Season 2 of the Logos of Experience and Truth podcast, where I continue this journey of unlocking the hidden mysteries of the beatific vision of God for you, the spiritual pilgrim treading upon the narrow path. Prepare yourself. Episode 20, The Veil of the Unknown. Welcome back to this final episode in Season 2 of the Logos of Experience and Truth podcast. I knew after the first season that I'd get much more personal and detailed with the personal details, but I didn't expect it to get as in-depth as I have. Speaking about each of the mysterious experiences I've witnessed, especially from a chronological order, has been eye-opening. If you've been following along and meditating and contemplating on the entirety of this season, perhaps you understand what writing and recording the audio for these episodes has done for me, and what doing these exercises periodically does for an individual. I've essentially just done the examination of conscious prayer, or what has been expressed by others with near-death experiences, including myself, as the life review, or one's life flashing before their eyes. Doing it in this reflective manner occurs at a much slower and steadier pace, of course, versus the feeling of timelessness that occurs during the mystical experience itself, but is still essentially the same thing. I actually don't know what to add to this episode that wasn't summarized in the first episode of the podcast when I gave an overview of the months leading up to the mystical experience of ascending to the Temple of the Father. Everything that occurred is so condensed, so compact, in such a short period of time, one day after another, new revelations exploding in my mind that it's difficult to talk about in a way that makes sense for the listener or reader. With my mind now exploding anew, dozens of books read, coupled with dozens of great courses, now called Wondrium courses, listened to and watched, all knowledge that existed within me began to coalesce in rapid fire towards piercing through the veil of illusion and seeing the eternal and real. So I will have to go to my notes in this episode, and as such, I'm already anticipating that I may sound much more mechanical and boring versus the previous episodes. Though I have mountains of journal entries and notes for everything that's been explained throughout this season, sitting down and actually drafting it has been rather easy. These experiences have always remained in my conscious memory as giant foam fingers pointing to the spiritual and to the experience of God. But much like there was very little I could point to prior to the near-death experience, specifically because that event became such a catalyst for the next phase of my life, so too during these brief 3.5 months after my dream of the statue of Anubis and the goddess Isis, all is a blur, since the new nexus point in my mind has become the mystical experience of ascending to the Temple of the Father on March 25th, 2018. But I will try to put the pieces together, both for myself as well as for those listening and reading. I was still heavy into conspiracy stuff at this time, and as I mentioned, there's something about holding different paradigms of thought in the mind that aids in this explosion of seeing the exact same connections and patterns and symbols, though apparently different, hidden behind the veil of the seen that ultimately reveals the unseen. All conspiracy stuff ended, though, after these experiences, beyond what I've expressed as the media-driven, politically motivated stuff, and even that has rarely seeped through over these past 4 years. I'm mentioning this because I was reading about the Virginia elections, today being November 4th and 2 days after, and I was thinking about why I was reading into this and how long has it been since I even peered into these political-type things. Well, I'm exactly a year removed from last year's elections and the podcast episode that spoke on such things, so the cyclical nature of my mind seeking political news returned at the exact same time it had returned last year, almost as if on cue or due to the seasonality of politics and voting occurring in November. It's a weird thing I've noticed after skimming through so many notes and meditating on such things, but it's as if the mind, or consciousness itself, has its own seasons. Like if you've ever woken up and wondered why on this day you were suddenly thinking of this song or movie or book, or this memory appears, or these thoughts are crossing your mind when they hadn't the day before, especially without any external stimuli to conjure the memory or thoughts up, it seems as if there's a cyclical aspect to the mind itself. I've spoken repeatedly of time being cyclical, and though we can calculate and quantize time as humankind has for thousands of years, the concept of it still requires mental activity and thought for it to actually exist. Kind of like the old Buddhist riddle of if a tree falls in the forest and nobody is there to witness it, does it make a sound? Without humanity to contemplate time, does time exist? Anyways, there's a seasonality of thoughts, as if whatever that part of consciousness that is consciousness, and wherever it dwells in the mind, revolves through the physical brain like a planet. It has its own grounding, or the common and frequently used thinking, but during its revolutions within the physical aspect of the brain, the mind remembers or thinks of things that it hadn't prior, since it's now moving through a storage section of the brain it hadn't in a day, week, month, year, whatever the time period. Just a quick detour comment that I figured I'd toss in here. I'm only saying this because the conspiracy stuff I'd come across was essentially conspiracy stuff I was coming across again. Right off the top of my head, I know that at the end of 2017, I'd come across the Flat Earth theory. Or I guess a better way of wording it is Flat Earth revival during these handful of months leading up to March 25th, 2018, and the months after. If you read carefully in Lucifer Revealed towards the end, I expressed this a bit as the lies of a spherical universe shown through television as a way of taking a snapshot of what my thoughts were then. There are many aspects to this Flat Earth idea though, and I'll give you all the details just so you know how at the very least, seeing and contemplating the potentiality of lies having been slammed in your mind your entire life can aid in piercing the ultimate illusion and lie of one's false self versus the true, spiritual, and immortal self. There were three aspects to the Flat Earth revival that had me thinking, and even as I watched it, I remembered that back in 2010, when I said I'd first gotten into some of the conspiracy stuff, I'd watched things then that I'd forgotten, but had now revived in my mind while watching anew. I also expressed many of these various theories I'd come across as confusion in my mind in the opening of the Vision Explained Deeper work found at the logosofexperienceandtruth.com, and that all of this confusion required clarity. These are the three aspects of the Flat Earth and the questions that are raised by it that are either presented by the theory or what I came up with as well. 1. Obviously, is the Earth actually flat and half a sphere and not an entire sphere? 2. Did we actually go to the moon in 1969? 3. Is there a firmament, or dome-like something up in low Earth orbit that creates the spherical shape and prevents us from leaving low Earth orbit, regardless of what's been shown on television and slammed into each and everyone's mind since birth for the past couple of generations? Now, I already stated my current stance on school and media-driven material versus online conspiracy material. Believing one and denying the other is no different than believing one and denying the other, at least as it pertains to one's perceptions of what is true and what is not true. For what is true and what is not true ultimately exists in the mind of each individual, and regardless of what's been shown, explained, or said to be proven, the acceptance and belief of whatever is seen as truth still rests in the mind of each. The issue for the mystic, or those that dive deeply within these understandings, arises when a difficult question is asked of oneself in the search for truth. Did I choose to believe in everything I believe? Or were those beliefs implanted into my mind by any of the various forms that could have transmitted the implantation of said belief? As an example, let's use something non-conspiratorial that I've mentioned a few times, my stance on the lotus position for meditation. Up until I'd actually tried to meditate, I'd seen people seated in the lotus position but did not know that's what it was called. I only tried to meditate in the position because I'd read and heard and seen a diagram of a straight line for the spine while meditating in this position and that it's seen as the best position for meditating. So I tried it, and tried it, and tried it, but hated, and hated it. However, as a newbie, my mind wanted to accept what I'd read of it being the best position for meditating, but since my own personal experience and bodily sensations told me otherwise, I was able to reject this position as being the best for meditation for myself, understood even way back then in 2001 or 2002 that seeing it as the best position, though attested to with much proof and many millennia of examples and proof, it was still something that I had to conform my mind to believe. And if I believed it, then I'd believe it because I was being told to believe it, not because my experience was yielding the belief for me, since my experience was telling me otherwise. The belief and understanding of the lotus position as the best position for meditation is a paradigm of thought that revolves around its status as the best position. A paradigm of thought, though, when looked at carefully, does not require conscious belief to be seen as true. For if dwelling within the paradigm, one does not see any alternative, for the alternative doesn't exist within the paradigm, especially if the paradigm itself forces other paradigms out and or fights to keep them out. Not saying that's what occurs with the lotus position in whatever religion or culture it's held to such high regard. I'm just stating the reality of most paradigms of thought. Thus, the belief in the lotus position as the best position for meditation doesn't necessarily mean that it was consciously chosen by those that believe this postulation. And thus, for those within the paradigm that the lotus position is the best position for meditation, this can itself now become part of the illusion of Maya. There's a famous scientific work on this paradigm idea. I can't remember what it's called, especially because I haven't read the entirety of it and don't own a copy of it and have only come across excerpts of it, but it's on my buy list for future books to find when I make my round back to studying science again. But without any knowledge of this work, I understood this concept by meditating on which of these millions of voices and ideas within my mind were my own, and which ones had been given, injected, or slammed into my mind, specifically seen while meditating on if I believed in God and why did I believe in God. I've already explained the why I believed in God, due to my near-death death experience, but that eventually, because of the influence and obvious paradigm insertion into the works and ideas of St. John of the Cross, I began to purge this experience away from my mind as the basis for my faith, and that it eventually led to a deeper desert of the soul experience versus solely getting rid of teachings I thought were whack or abandoning spiritual phenomena that, though cool to see and experience, didn't really bring me any closer to both the understanding of God or to experiencing God again. So again, the question, much like how in the first season I asked you to ponder if you've ever really had your own thought, so too if we dive deeper. Since thought is conscious and belief is subconscious, did you come to believe each of your beliefs consciously, or were they implanted into your mind unawares, due to living within the paradigm of belief and structure itself in whatever family, town, city, state, country, religion to which you were born, and that such beliefs simply insert themselves into the subconscious minds of those that dwell within the paradigm of belief? So let's use a more hot-button topic to explore this with. I'll ask a question, two questions, and the question applies to both sides, since both sides are equally a paradigm when looked at carefully. And only you listening or reading can be honest with yourself on the answers to these questions. First question, have you already made your decision regarding abortion? I'm positive that was probably a quick answer for most, especially in the USA. Second question, prior to reaching your decision on abortion, did you read the actual law and what the chief justices at the time said about Roe v. Wade? I'll pause for a bit. Though I'm positive the majority listening or reading on both sides had to think about this one and that the majority have a no response in their mind. The next question, which again reveals the paradigm to which one exists, is if you didn't read the actual law of Roe v. Wade and yet reached your conclusion and decision regarding abortion, then how did you come to that conclusion or decision? And did you actually make a conscious decision that was not utterly dependent on the paradigm to which your mind exists regarding abortion? If you're within the paradigm and everything in the paradigm in which you exist is telling you and reflecting back to you the paradigm, then is the decision actually conscious? Are all beliefs that are believed in conscious, only some, or are any? You can ponder on this yourself and meditate and examine pretty much anything that you've accepted as truth. If you actually accepted it consciously, or if all you did was accept what the paradigm that you exist within has told you, and further, is doing this in actual conscious choice. For instance, and I may have done this already, and if I did, sorry for repeating myself, the old Coke or Pepsi challenge. If I put a can of Coke and Pepsi in front of you and tell you to choose to drink one, how many choices of drink do you have? The majority will say Coke or Pepsi, for those are the two paradigms that one is being presented with, and since it's easier for humans to dwell within a paradigm, they will choose either Coke or Pepsi. But there are two other options that exist. Not partaking in the Coke or Pepsi challenge and/or not drinking either if presented with a choice, or getting an empty glass and pouring them both into the same glass. So denying either of the paradigms one is presented with, or combining the different paradigms in some way are also options, though not quickly seen. See where I'm going with this? And as a caveat to the atheist or scientist that has listened thus far that thinks perhaps I haven't actually considered the not believing side of God, hopefully my explaining the nature of the paradigm and my understanding of it as it pertains to actual conscious choosing and believing, and my desire to understand, root out, and find and fully make true conscious decisions has washed that potential idea away. I said I'd been knee-deep in conspiracy stuff, didn't I? And that after my dream of Isis and Anubis, I had to dive into ancient history, right? Unfortunately, YouTubing ancient Sumerian, for instance, brings with it a lot of conspiracy stuff. Going further, for the Catholic that delves into conspiracy stuff, there's a whole megaton load of conspiracy stuff about the evil Catholic Church and the evil popes and black popes. Then it got into the ancient alien theories of the Sumerian Anunnaki beings and that the royalty in the world, including the Vatican, are really preserving these ancient bloodlines of the aliens that came down and formed the world, and that royalty are the descendants of the Nephilim of Bible lore and thus contain blood or DNA of these otherworldly godlike beings, while the rest of the world are the mud people that were created to serve them, and many other such theories. Interesting that several other cultures have the same type of creation myth but far predate modern conspiracy stuff. I think it was the Chinese or Japanese, where the goddess first formed human beings, but got tired and exhausted from doing it by hand one at a time. So instead, I think she threw a bunch of rocks into the mud like in the Greek myth, or dragged a stick through the mud or something like that, and the rest of the subservient humanity came from the flakes and dust, while those first handmade people became the elite or royal ones. If you understand this about thought, belief, and the paradigms that exist within the mind, then the question is, or at least for me, how does one change the paradigm truly? If I, for instance, believed everything these conspiracy things were speaking about regarding the church, and then moved or merged into the paradigm of disbelieving the church and believing the conspiracy, then I would do nothing more than switch one paradigm for another and would still be subservient to the new paradigm. I could choose to ignore the paradigm to which I exist and/or ignore the paradigm of the conspiracy, but then I'd be choosing ignorance, and the learning mind of the human being typically won't allow that, at least for very long. I could choose to shatter the paradigm to which I exist or the new paradigm by destroying either or with knowledge of either or, but then all that means is I destroyed one for the other and was simply existing in whichever paradigm I chose to champion. If I ignore my paradigm for another, though, then in a way I am ignoring my life, my past, the culture to which I was born, and will lose all memory and learning prior to the shift, for the shift itself would skewer the mind and the acquired ideas towards seeing the old as worthless compared to the new, even though one would have done nothing more than change one paradigm for another. Quite difficult when you break it down like this. But there is a path. There is a teaching. There is a way, and it is the most difficult path possible when it comes to the paradigm of thought that exists within ourselves. It is quite possibly the most difficult of all the teachings of the Christ. Love your enemies, which itself was Christ creating a new paradigm of thought. This is not to say that every single paradigm one exists in creates an enemy out of every paradigm that is different, but it does have a tendency of occurring. For instance, during my gaming years, at first it was Nintendo versus Sega, then Sony versus Nintendo, then Sony versus Xbox. And the vitriol that both sides would heap upon one another for whose system was the best was omnipresent everywhere anybody started talking about video games, even though both sides were doing the exact same thing, playing video games, though within the paradigm or system of choice. and the same patterns would arise. Some exclusively chose one or the other, some tried both but favored one over the other, and then some would buy all video game systems and say they were all the same, and then others would leave the console wars and go PC gaming since Apple wasn't really a gaming system and thus wasn't seen as a separate paradigm. Kind of a silly thing to argue and fight over, but one can see this nexus of us versus them in literally every aspect of life, especially in this media-driven world we now exist in. But love your enemies? Why would I do that? Well, if you understand that the worldview that you see and experience is based upon these various paradigms of thought, then you love your enemies because their paradigm is different from your own. Though they exist within their own paradigm, it doesn't necessarily mean they chose it consciously. So long as you've acknowledged to yourself that you probably didn't choose each of your paradigms of thought or belief consciously either. The problem is that since we think we've consciously chosen everything we think and believe in, this assumes that our enemy must also have consciously thought of everything they think and believe in. And if you've understood that existing within the paradigm means that many, many of the things believed in were not consciously chosen, but given, implanted, and smashed into the mind by the paradigm, then the same reality exists within the mind of our neighbor or our enemy as it exists within ourselves. If we realize that we did not choose our own paradigms, then even if completely contrary to our paradigms, our enemies most likely did not consciously choose their own paradigms either. And thus, what we come to hate about our enemies may not have even consciously chosen to exist in such and such manner with such and such thoughts or beliefs due to the paradigm dictating it to them. And thus, love your enemies and pray for them. Possibly the hardest of all of Christ's teachings to truly appreciate or accomplish. For any Americans listening, this concept of the paradigm can be easily seen, especially in today's venomous political media climate. I won't say any more on that, but that there is no love for the perceived enemy that exists outside of the paradigm, overwhelmingly within one side of the table, is extremely obvious and apparent. In order to hold different paradigms in the mind, though, requires a mind capable of doing so. Capable of seeing the various viewpoints, capable of venturing into the unknown of a different opinion or idea, and putting it to the test within one's own paradigm, and with trying with all of one's might to see the world from the paradigm of the one outside of yourself, of putting one's own paradigm to the test to see if it stands up against the opposite paradigm, or if they are actually two sides of the same coin. This is very hard to do, because if one has been listening or reading carefully, when one loses or abandons or tests or challenges their paradigm of choice, it is like a death is occurring within the person. Since our natural instinct is to defend our life, this translates internally as well to defending our thoughts and beliefs. Since through our thoughts and beliefs, the experience of self occurs, even if the false self is what is experienced, since the false self isn't seen as the false self until the real self is seen. Even if all of this internal stuff has been dictated by the paradigm in which we dwell, we will defend this, for losing this is like dying. Hopefully, words of the narrow path of Christ are springing into the mind right now. If I word it spiritually, in order to find God, one must be willing to lose God by truly considering if God doesn't exist or is pure fantasy. This is why in the Vision Explained Deeper work, I compared the tenets and path of atheistic science to the path of the Buddha, in which the Buddha states that God is not needed to reach enlightenment. However, after his enlightenment, the gods came to him and told him to teach his path to others. So the gods had now become real to him, if not prior, due to the paradigm of his thought having changed. Doing this in the mind is what is called polarization of duality or opposites within the Hermetic works, especially of the Kybalion. This is what I did during those 3.5 months after my dream of Isis and Anubis, itself a massive paradigm shift since I'd barely paid a single thought to Egyptian lore, along with everything else described in the dream, and hadn't thought to see how far-reaching the religions and mythologies of ancient Egypt and Sumeria had possibly attributed to the mysteries of antiquity that have been carried forward through the mysteries of the various modern religions. The wide open path of the left side, the wide open path of the right side, and the narrow path that attempts to move in between them both in a state of attempted equilibrium. The old and the new, the conservative and the progressive, the Democrat and the Republican, the atheist and the theist, the male and the female, mental thought or emotion, unreal and the real, old and new or young and old, visible and invisible, falsity and truth, cause and effect, time and timelessness, science and religion, the finite and the infinite, earth and air, fire and water, planetary mass and space, sun and moon, the body and the mind, the mortal human, and the immortal God. This is the depth of the paradox of the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil, or the paradox of opposites, or the paradox of duality. Thor's explanation of this in the Avengers Endgame movie was quite funny when explaining the paradox of impermanence, or change in the Buddhist sense. All things change, nothing remains the same, except that all things change, and nothing remains the same. Thus, the paradox of all things changing is that the law of all things changing remains the same, and thus is that which doesn't change, thus creating the paradox. The microcosm of man within the mind and the macrocosm of the universe experienced outside of the body, with the senses and the constant instantaneous back and forth of having this experience both outside and yet inside, for the senses find their form within the brain and mind, or the external finding its definition within the internal, and the internal seeing its reflection and finding its form in the external in an infinite loop of instantaneous experience that we call being human. Holding these paradoxes in the mind and doing so with such force of will and focus is what eventually pierces the veil of the known and the unknown, for the unknown can also be translated beyond the invisible or spiritual as any paradigm that is unknown or opposite. Holding these paradoxes in the mind and meditating on them is what I was doing during this time. Thinking at the same time of all the reasons to believe in God given by all the religions and religious ideas of the world, while also thinking of all the reasons why there is no God as provided by atheistic science. The Catholic Church as I know it, the Catholic Church's opponents to the Church present her in conspiracy theories. Evolving monkey man from science, humans created by aliens that were self-styled gods from conspiracy theories or ancient myths, or humanity created by the breath of God. The devil as the ruler of the world, or Yaldabaoth in the Gnostic Christian mythologies, or Christ as the maker of the world, since he is said to be the word of God the Father, and through his word, through Christ, all things were made. The solar system as presented by modern science and ancient cosmological views of the flat plane and domed earth. Long ago, I know for a fact I watched a video of Stanley Kubrick. I think it was even his last interview before dying just before the Eyes Wide Shut movie came out, and he was asked what his best movie was. If you don't know who Stanley Kubrick is, he was considered the master of movie making by many, many directors, including Steven Spielberg, who actually finished his last movie, Artificial Intelligence. Kubrick answered that it was the most famous movie in the world, the most watched movie in the world, and that nobody knew it was a movie or that he had made it in this video. The only thing that matched such a description was the moon launch and landing, having been at the time the most watched televised event in the world. I also distinctly remember seeing pictures of those first astronauts on the set of 2001 A Space Odyssey, alongside the Secretary of Defense and someone from NASA. I distinctly remember watching a video that took place in modern times that had a NASA person literally say that they hadn't been back to the moon because they're such morons, and this begs the question of why are they still receiving funding from taxpayers, since they'd somehow misplaced the tech for how they got to the moon in the first place. Just as I distinctly remember watching a video of Bill Nye the Science Guy downplaying any space travel other than low Earth orbit space exploration, since anything beyond that was an illusion, even though we'd supposedly been to the moon. Just as I distinctly remember seeing a rocket launch with a camera attached to it by amateurs on YouTube, and the rocket getting stuck in something once it reached a certain distance above the Earth. Yet any one or all of these things could have been doctored, just as equally as what is being presented as having been doctored. So the final conclusion I reach is I don't know, and I'm done expending mental energy on trying to figure it out. I can see the truth, I can see the lies, and I can see the lies, and I can see the truth. And since I have zero experience in such things, my ultimate conclusion is I'm not sure, and it was only after this that I dug deep within towards ultimate truth of the reality of my own self, since beyond this, what can anybody truly know? Both sides made valid points, but since I wasn't there during the moon launch, wasn't an astronaut that potentially went up there, and am not a rocket scientist that can create a rocket and launch it up with my own camera attached, I have no idea. And then, the personal question of do I care, and what would it yield me if I knew or sided with one side or the other, above and beyond actual knowledge or experience and actually being blasted up into space to the moon? Well, I have to refer these concepts to my own experience and knowledge. I'll give you what I have seen through the ancient art of body mysticism, for to the ancients, there was no greater temple of the Spirit of God to study and marvel at than the human body itself, just as St. Paul affirms in the New Testament. The way basically every culture prior to scientific modernity depicted the cosmology of the world and the universe above was pretty much the same. A flat plane with a dome-looking ceiling and some sort of dangling pieces of earth underneath the flat expanse of land, or the various descriptions of the underworld, or the previous worlds that human beings existed in, if I'm thinking of the caves, for instance, that Native Americans say we crawled out of when we came up and into the light of the surface. Above this, circular rings that house the planets, the moon and the sun, and then the ceiling or the vault, and above this, the realm of the gods or heaven. If looked at and compared closely, these depictions look exactly like an eyeball if you plucked it out of its eye socket with the dangling thing at the end of it, or the brain and the brainstem if you pulled it out of the skull. This ancient cosmology is a reflection of a very physical and external-looking cosmology of the universe for what's supposed to be the internal spiritual teachings of the various religions and ancient mythologies of thought. The way modern science has depicted the cosmology of the universe as a solar system with elliptically rotating planets circling the sun paints a much different picture. Yet if you hold up this scientific cosmology to ancient occult manuscripts of the energy centers within the human being, which makes sense since, as I said, many of these early scientists were all occultists, alchemists, priests, mystics, just as if you held this picture alongside anything that depicts the chakra or aura centers of the human being from Eastern religions, they all depict the exact same thing and are essentially the exact same image. This modern cosmology is a reflection of a very spiritual and internal-looking cosmology of the universe for what's supposed to be the external teachings of scientific observation. Thus, the mystery of the microcosm and macrocosm of the human being. That which is within is that which is seen without, and that which is seen without is that which is seen within. The two ultimate paradigms of human existence, the experience of the external and the internal. Yet they both occur inside of the human brain and mind, and thus harmonizing this and understanding the paradigm to which you primarily exist of either external or internal, and then loving the enemy within or without that represents the opposite, external or internal, is what brings the merging of duality or paradox within the mind, and brings one to the very throne of God in the beatific vision. There is no clearer way for me to express this mystery. If we take this further into the mystery of Christ and further answer why Christ came down in physical form in the external, it was because seeing him externally still means seeing him within internally, even if it's just belief that he existed as an actual human being in any time other than when he existed physically. To see and picture him in the mind as an external being is meant to reflect internally to the individual seeing him within oneself. For as said above, all of it occurs in the brain and mind internally, regardless if it's seen externally, or the apostles that actually witnessed him, or as a belief of his having been seen in the external. You only see Christ in your mind when you realize that you only see Christ in your mind, your own mind. The external mysteries of all time were created to show the mystery within, for they contain the reflection of the mystery within that was seen within, even if seen without, by those that understood the mystery. And thus when you realize this, having moved past the entire belief in Jesus having lived in the external world and that where he truly lives is within your mind and heart, once this truly occurs, the Son of God is born within you and the beatific vision of God himself is granted and blessed and seen in some way that each individual will understand so long as you've purged yourself while traversing through the desert of the soul. This is why God sent the second person of the Trinity down to earth in physical human form. Inspiring the prophets from within with messages and words causes people to seek its form in the external and is what probably leads to idolatry in trying to give physical expression of the internal knowledge of God in the visible manifested external world, where providing the word itself in the external form of the manifested Jesus causes people to seek the word and find its form and expression within themselves. If you have visited my website, logosofexperienceandtruth.com, and have pondered the deeper why of the images provided, hopefully I have answered it more fully if the vision explained deeper work did not answer it adequately. I was horrified by the images seen of the atrocities ISIS performed on the differing Muslims and Christians and their children when they took over those parts of the Middle East during Obama's presidency, images no mainstream media ever ran. But I was also horrified of the atrocities the U.S. military had inflicted on those distant people in Iraq and Afghanistan, from the thousands and millions of bombs and bullets inflicted upon them for a military agenda that was quite unclear. I was horrified while studying history of all the battles waged in the name of whichever God was being invoked during whichever epoch of time and whichever country or religion was doing it, but especially the Catholic during the Crusades for obvious reasons. And I've been horrified over such brilliant and ingenious technology to better and bring more comfort to human life driven by science, yet also capable of creating and having created the worst weapons humankind has ever seen, and that regardless of what was said during the Cold War era through the many forms of media influencing the paradigm of thought regarding the enemy, my country is actually the only country that has used such weapons on a civilian population. This was not the Christianity I felt deep within. This was not the deeper meaning of the Quran I'd read. This was not the science that I'd studied in school. All our paradigms, including those not listed here but listed in the Vision Explained deeper work, when one is within the paradigm, all other paradigms can appear as enemies. There is no reconciliation between paradigms unless common ground is found. Yet what could be more different than the apparent differences of all religions and science? Unless there was actually something that linked them all, beyond the fact they are entirely of human design in the external, though in the religious case, believed to have been inspired by God in some way. If something linked all paradigms of religious, mythological, spiritual, and scientific thought, would it, or could it, create a new paradigm of thought and end the bloodshed and the hatred of the apparent external enemy? If all paradigms, at least in the religious and scientific schools of thought, could see their ultimate source and ultimate goal and ultimate conclusions as actually being the same and having already been depicted the same, though apparently different in how they've been depicted or described in the external, would or couldn't there be peace between the various different paradigms? I know what you're thinking, and I'm thinking it myself. I'm a dreamer. And yet, I have provided the image of the beatific vision of God, and that the same image permeates each and every one of these paradigms I have shown and show on my website. It is up to you listening and reading whether you accept this new paradigm while at the same time accepting all paradigms within the new paradigm in some way through your own search for common ground, and do what Christ commands, to love your enemy as your neighbor and to pray for them, especially for those that consider themselves Christian. I have run out of steam in this season of episodes. When we return to season 3 of the podcast, we will continue after the Ascension to the Temple of the Father experience and will discuss the next 2 months of almost daily revelation, much of which I've given in this episode already, but we'll dive in deeper into the 3 to 4 straight days of mystical experience that utterly defy all comprehension and shattered any and all illusions I had of the chasm between man and God, and instead experienced the supreme closeness of God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Spirit. But I've tried to comprehend it and will do my best to explain it to you, for the paradigm that I exist in now is entirely based on showing this, that which is seen during the mystical beatific vision of God, as the Catholic calls it, and that it is the same vision that is seen throughout the world, by various names for the experience and the various artworks that have been created to show it, and the various images science has shown as the foundations for physical existence, life itself, and the coding within humanity. It all looks the same and denotes the same experiences and understandings, even if it doesn't appear to look the same on the surface of experience and understanding. And thus the mystery continues. Until next time. If you have yet to visit logosofexperienceandtruth.com and borne witness to and made the connection of the near 1,000 images portraying what is seen during the mystical vision throughout all time, all peoples, all cultures, all traditions, the visual representation of the epitomes of science in all religions, make sure to visit and see and judge for yourself if what is shown equals my claim to experience and truth, and that which potentially unites all the deeper hidden invisible mysteries of humankind.